and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 149. That's right, one episode away from 150, which in a hurried group meeting earlier before the show, we decided it's 150. tune in next week for details. Joining me this week, as always, he's going to be a slave laborer this summer. It's Glacinator.
Hello, yes, that's right. I have gotten an internship in Boston this summer, so I will still be here, though, hopefully. So you'll still be able to hear my lovely voice over the course of the summer.
What he does?
I will develop a Boston accent just for you guys.
Go to South Boston.
Make it really annoying.
Get a South Boston accent, some of those Red
Sox.
Yeah,
from Boston. Yeah, I like playing video games.
South. Sound like one of the Dropkick Murphys or something. No offense to Dropkick Murphys fans. I like some of their stuff. Don't get me wrong. I think that's one fan base I'd really rather not piss off. Just something tells me. What Glacinator doesn't know is he's going to be put in the hold of a 17th century ship for historical tours and forced to row. It's going to look a lot like The Life of Brian. Also joining us, as he always does, only he knows why, it's John.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, a little sad this week. Heard of the passing of one of my favorite managers in wrestling of all time, poor Paul Bearer. And good old Paul. Good old Uncle Paul, I suppose. That's it.
You know, I was going to save that until the end of the show, but since you brought it up, which is absolutely fine, let's just do it now, because I have to admit, I'm... In my private moments, I can be sentimental, and I actually do have more emotions than just humor and absolute anger, but the reality is there's not a lot of things that I read week in and week out that you know, really actually get to me, because it's not personal, it's not in my personal sphere, but this one did, and you know, hearing about the passing of Percy Pringle, Bill Moody, you know, it just kind of wakes you up to the fact that nobody lives forever. For me, it did sadden me a little bit, and I have to say, as someone who loves really well-crafted characters in any form, doesn't matter if it's video games, movies, wrestling, you know, television, whatever, he was probably one of my favorites in wrestling. I can't say overall, but in wrestling. And I do have to say that just the way he brought to life that Paul Bearer character. I mean, I was not a young child when that character first debuted, and it scared the ever-loving shit out of me. I mean, there's other things I can call to mind that were as creepy or creepier than Bill Moody as Paul Bearer, but not many. I mean, it's...
Well, I mean, he owned that character as much as it was over the top and cheeseball at times, but it had the element of creepiness to him too, as well. But you know, you can't deny he was in it for real. You know, 110%. And what were you gonna say?
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, I just think that he was one of the last of a dying breed or the last of a generation or an era, I guess, of how managers were in wrestling, and not to get too far into wrestling itself, but you know, he's just one of those. He's one of the last guys that really brought out the best in the guys that he was with, and made them, you know, big, large, just as large as larger than life than he was. You know,
I look at him as the last of traditional managers.
Yeah.
And I always thought they should have just done, when it went to more modern, the Attitude Era type stuff, they should have just done away with managers, period, because they were trying to use them in ways that was just never meant to be. But I think of him, Jimmy Hart.
Bobby Heenan.
Thank you. Yeah, Bobby Heenan. You know, and that leads me to be able to now, and I can't believe I didn't tell you guys this in private, but I can say it on air. The second half of a story, I know I've told the story about being on the same flight as Jimmy Mouth South Hard, right? And I was coming from or going to Alabama. I don't remember. I did it enough times. It's a blur at this point. But when I was getting off the flight, there was a guy, he was sitting in the emergency row, and I guess he was just going to wait until everybody got off the flight. He was still sitting there. And as I was filing past him, there was a guy probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years younger, that was in front of me, and he kind of leaned in, and so I moved around him, and I figured, okay, he's a wrestling fan. He's going to say something to him, you know, and that's just not my thing. I don't do that, and so I had no interest in doing it. But I heard this guy literally say, and it made me whip my head around, he leans in to Jimmy Hart, and he says, "Excuse me, weren't you Paul Bearer?" And fair enough. Whatever, people make mistakes, but the look on that man's face when he said that is a look that will be burned in my brain probably even after I'm dead. And I can't to this day, and I have thought about this happening or incident or whatever you want to call it a million times in the last 5, 6, 7 years since it happened. I cannot even tell you what the look meant. I think there was shock involved, but it just, and I just quickly exited the airplane so I could start laughing. I just thought, how in the hell do you do that? You know?
Yep.
How do you mistake a guy who was probably one of the few managers I truly would love to have wrapped my hands around and just choked the life out of him. I mean, that's how well he did it at his shtick, you know. But I bet I probably almost hurt myself. My head whipped around so fast to see what was going on behind me because, oh my God, you know. And Jimmy Hart hasn't changed, or at least he hadn't then. He's still, no. You know, the rail thin.
Yep.
Bearded guy, complete opposite of Paul Bearer, but mm-hmm. I've been meaning to tell that part of the story, or I may have. I mean, again, we're in episode 149. I've appeared on a couple wrestling podcasts. I've appeared on other podcasts. There may be audio evidence of me telling that story before, so if I have, and you've heard it, I apologize, but oh, God.
Yeah, it must have been mortified.
That has to be the textbook definition of awkward. Just awkward moment, but yeah, Glacinator, to you as a non-wrestling fan, I know we're boring you to death, and I know we've stalled the beginning of the show. Lord, help us all. You should at least go check out some of the vignettes on YouTube with the guy, and of course, it helped that Taker was doing his shtick back then. I know, John, you've always thought it was a little too much sci-fi, a little too much cheese, but I just absolutely loved that particular version of The Undertaker with Paul Bearer.
I don't mind. I don't mind the old Undertaker. Not at all.
Didn't you say at one time that it was like during the Purple Glove era, I think as we were calling it, that it was a little bit too sci-fi for you or something, or do I have you confused with somebody else?
There was definitely some silly stuff, but as far as when, you know, the early stuff when they were the bad guys and being that creepy and dark and, you know, that was still all good stuff.
You have to remember, though, and I know you know this, John, this is the company. I mean, when it comes to silly stuff, it's all relative. And I say this because the prime example I use when I say that the silly stuff is all relative, this is the company that decided that an elderly woman should give birth to a hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I say the phrase, yeah, it's a little too silly, it's all relative, isn't it?
That, you know, I mean, I understand that they're PG-13 now, but there was a time period where there was no such thing as over the top.
Yeah.
You know, it's rare that you can make me with goofy stuff, with really out there stuff. It's very rare that you can make me want to shut off my television. But that night, I just about shut off Raw and said, okay, that, no more. I give up. No. Okay, so we are doing a video game podcast. At least that's the pretense anyway. John, why don't you start us off this week? What have you been playing?
Yeah, okay. Well, I haven't been playing a whole lot of like full-on games other than a bit of Rock Band on Wanda's birthday last week and some more Nintendo Land with Peter. We finished the Metroid and the Pikmin levels together, the three of us, and some more big cheers. No shitting of pants this time, but it was still fun. But I did play a couple of demos. Well, before I get into the... What should I talk about first? Okay, I'll talk about Runner. I played the Runner 2 demo on the Wii U, and which inspired me to play a bit more Runner on 3DS on the BitTrip Saga. And I talked about the regular Runner, the first Runner, I think a bit, and that one where it's a level where you're running through the whole thing, and the whole point of the game is to jump over obstacles, slide underneath low hanging obstacles. It's all obstacles, collecting gold along the way for bonuses and that kind of thing, and all to the rhythm of the music. And as you, the better you do, the more the music kind of builds and becomes a really complete and fun song by the end. And so Runner 2 kind of takes that formula or that premise and keeps it much the same, but it really goes beyond, goes the extra mile in terms of sound, visuals. It steps into the HD, whereas BitTrip Runner was that 8-bit retro style. Keeps very very simplified graphics. The Runner 2 is very very pretty. The presentation of the demo, and of course I would assume that is also the main game, is really funny. There's a narrator at times, voiced by, I can't remember his name, but he's the guy who's the voice of Mario in Nintendo. And he always, it's funny because he introduces himself almost every time he talks. Hi, I'm blah 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 blah, and this is whatever, and but it's lighthearted, it's fun, it's bright colors, it's very cheery, and it's all those things on top of a very tough game. The learning curve, even in the demo, you can tell that they've toned it down a bit for this first level to get you accustomed to the different moves you can do, because you can do things like you jump, slide, you can kick through particular obstacles, and there's a few more things that they add along the way, but they it's a lot more gradual, whereas on the BitTrip Runner on 3DS and WiiWare, it's really after the first level they throw you in the deep end, and because it's kind of the thing where if you fail, they toss you right back to the beginning of the level, even if it's the last obstacle in the whole level, you go right back to the beginning. But in Runner 2, there's actually a checkpoint in halfway or so, and it's very welcome, to be honest, so that you're not getting yourself frustrated, and it also lends itself to letting you have longer levels as well. But you can jump over the check if you feel up to the challenge. You can jump over the checkpoint and keep on going, and then they'll, if you fail, you go back to the beginning. So I really liked Runner 2. I did find, though I have heard, I should back up. I played it on Wii U, and I have heard that the Wii U version is very buggy, in that it makes the system freeze up at times upon trying to exit the game, which is kind of sucky, which I don't want that to have that frustration. So I have not bought it yet. Which means I did. I also didn't buy it on an Xbox or anything like that. As much as I would love the achievements, I'll probably end up buying it on Wii U, because Peter tends to play the Wii U more. I think at least that first world would be something that he would enjoy. But I'll wait till they patch it and they get it fixed up, and hopefully there'll be a sale in the near future for it as well. And then finally, I've been playing another demo, but this time on 360, the Metal Gear Rising Revengeance demo. I played that one to completion, and it's really cool. It's a very beautiful game, but there's nothing to do here with stealth at all, which is synonymous with Metal Gear. It's all-out action in the style of a Devil May Cry or not really God of War, but Devil May Cry, Bayonetta, those kinds of games, where you go into a room, enemies come at you, you clear the room and you move on. It's you play as Raiden, who was one of the main characters from Metal Gear Solid 2. In 2, he was very much a bit of a douchebag. In this one, he's a lot more like Raiden from Metal Gear Solid 4, like how he appears in that and his attitude, which is very much more badass, we'll say. And and he has this sword that can basically cut through anything. So when this game was first announced, people were calling it Metal Gear Fruit Ninja because they were planning on some Kinect stuff going on with it. What happened eventually, over the course of time, Kojima and Konami kind of let go of the reins and gave it to Platinum Games, who are known for their fighting games, or their action games, and they kind of turned it into, again, a little more Devil May Cry-ish. So you have, X and Y are your two main attacks, light and heavy, but what you can do is once you get an enemy weakened up, you hold down the left trigger, and what happens is it kind of goes into a slow motion, and the right analog stick, you can line up what angle you want to slice this guy. And basically anything in the game, almost every enemy, as long as they're at a certain weakness point, you can cut through, slice them into 100 pieces if you can move your thumb fast enough. But you'll find yourself just running in a situation, kicking a couple, just wailing on a couple guys, and then as soon as they show the indicator, you just slow time down more or less. Say, I'm going to slice off his head, his arm, and right down the middle if you want, and you flick your thumb in the direction you want to go, but it allows you to line up the angle, and then boom, it happens, and you reach in and you grab his glowing blue spinal cord, because they're cyborgs, and you pull it out, and you get your electrolytes back, and your energy goes back up to full, and it's very, very satisfying bit of action. What was also very satisfying was taking down a Metal Gear Gecko, this great big robot with these organic legs, and taking it down with just a sword. It was pretty cool. So I think I will be getting this game eventually, but what I have heard is that the game is really, really... It has all the crazy Kojima, Metal Gear, like, cutscenes and just out there storylines and all that kind of stuff. But apparently it's only, like, 5 hours long, and it's currently going for a full $60 price tag. So I'm going to... Considering how many games I have in the queue, I am going to wait a while before I get that, because I'm sure the price will come down on it. So, but if I would definitely try the demo. It's really fun and neat little twist on typical, action games where it's all about combos and taking guys out in a room and moving on. So yeah, that's it.
What? You fell into the, it's only 5.5 hour trap? It's a Metal Gear game, not an RPG. I'm kidding.
It's a joke, but it's not that uncommon for me to make the same crack about people who say the same things. But it's just for me right now, it's more of a priority.
That's why I'm saying it's a joke. The time thing bugs the hell out of me in a lot of cases, but I haven't bought it either. And also, I never heard about the Kinect stuff. The only reason I was calling it Metal Gear Solid Fruit Ninja was the famous, infamous, demo that they showed at E3 a couple years ago before it even had a name that just showed Raiden like chopping watermelons over and over and over again. Yep, it was like a 2-minute trailer of nothing but watermelons, and that's where the fruit... That's where at least... With Pat and I think it was Pat, the Fruit Ninja thing came from. Or maybe it was just Twitter in general. I mean, all social medias have their downside, but their upside is that when you want to be able to laugh when you're sitting through a long and rather boring press conference, social media will provide those laughs for you. may make you a worse person for laughing at some of the stuff.
Yeah, like I don't think it was going to be 100% motion control game, but I think there was supposed to be elements of motion control for some of the cutting and stuff.
I don't know. Yeah, this next generation is going to be interesting because the whole do we do motion control? Do we add stuff for tablets? Do we go with this? Do we go with that? Eventually, to use a phrase that's rather crude, very old, but very appropriate, they're either going to have to shit or get off the pot. One of the two. You know,
yeah.
I don't think it's going away at this point. And to be honest, motion controls in a fighting game?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the reason why I think that they kind of stepped away. Maybe they found out that it was going to be a lot tougher than they thought it would be.
Yeah, but I would think that's more of a natural fit than a lot of games. See, I'm taking a different perspective on it. That seems to me a more natural fit because, you know, when you're fighting,
mm-hmm.
you're kind of using your hands, feet.
Part of me thinks, I mean, the way they have the game now, there is a lot of precision in the way that you use the analog stick to line up your cuts the way you want to cut them. That makes me wonder, like, if you just couldn't get that precision with the current tech, you know?
It's entirely possible, and I've said 1,000 times with Kinect, Move, the Wii U pad, this, that, and the other thing, it's generation one. I realize that we're in a culture and we're covering an industry that if it hasn't just gone bonkers in 6 months, it's shit. But, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. I didn't want to use it, shitball cliche, but there was nothing else I could think of better. I want to get that. It's on the list of games I need to get because it actually looked like something. I'm a little surprised. It's done very well review score wise. I occasionally, once every couple weeks, slog my way down to the down to the lower levels of the internet, i.e. Metacritic. It's done rather well, and I thought it was a case of kind of like Devil May Cry, Dead Space, others of that ilk, where if they strayed too far from what the series is supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they may be up Poop Creek without a paddle.
I think if this had starred, you know, Solid Snake or Old Snake, maybe there would have been the case for it. But within the Metal Gear series, having an action game starring Raiden, that, you know, all sword fighting, does kind of make sense.
It does, and I've seen enough joke comics about Raiden
mm-hmm.
that I think he's kind of like Scorpion. To a lot of Metal Gear fans,
yeah.
That's just a hypothesis on my part. That for those of you that don't get that, it's a scientific way of saying I'm pulling that right out of my ass. But it's a sense I get. You see, you know, whether you like webcomics or not, in a lot of cases, if you're seeing jokes about certain characters or certain things that happen in a game, that can give you at least a tiny glimpse into perhaps what the internet hive mind is thinking about it. If that demo's on Xbox Live, I've actually been firing up my Xbox every once in a while. I know, amazing. I may have to check it out.
Yeah.
There was another demo I wanted to check out on Xbox Live. I'll have to figure it out, or I'll have to remember which one it was and try it. But, Mr. Glacinator.
Yes.
You've been doing any video game playing, or you've been doing more animating?
Sadly, I've been doing more animating than game playing, but I have been playing some things. First, I'll start with a PSA for anyone out there that has a Vita. So I guess I'm just talking to Chris right now. But
I think so, in our listening base.
Last week was the anniversary of the Vita, like 1 year. And they had some free games actually out there right now on the PlayStation Network Market, or whatever they call it, PlayStation Store for Vita. And those games are Patapon, Piotama, Patrick Heroes, and this isn't for the anniversary, but also Plants for Zombies is free on there right now as well. So I've seen my brother play Patapon before. I haven't tried it out yet myself, but Patapon is basically it's a rhythm based side scroller RTS, if that makes any sense to you. Basically, you control like these little black circle looking things. They sort of look like the buttons on the Vita, and you control them and you use them to take over towers and stuff, and you put in different like beat commands to make them do different attacks. So it's all based around like this rhythm of this drum that you have to base your attacks off of. So I thought it was pretty interesting when I saw my brother play it. As I said, I still need to do it, try it out for myself, but from what I've heard and what I've seen, it's a pretty good game. Piyotama, I tried it out the other night. It's basically like a Bubble Bobble / Tetris sort of game where you have to line up these circle things, and it's your average puzzle game. There wasn't really anything special there that I found, so I'll probably take it off after about a week just because, I mean, as I said, nothing really special. Patchwork Heroes, I tried the demo for it, like the trial version of it, even though I have the full thing, and it's basically like a tower defense sort of game, but not really at all. Basically, you control these little people things, and you're trying to take down airships. And what you do is you can cut the airship like paper, like cut it in half. And the more you cut in half, the slower the enemies go. And you have to base where you're cutting the ship so that you don't fall off while you're cutting it, which I guess is an interesting mechanic. It's sort of complicated, so I still haven't really got into it that much. You can recruit people on the ship and have them drop bombs for you. And this is all happening in the same level. There's different stages. So that seems interesting. And then Plants vs. Zombies is, you know, Plants vs. Zombies. If you don't know what that is by now, then you're living under a rock. So that's what's on Vita right now. Also, I didn't play it this week, but I watched my roommate play all the way through Heavy Rain. And I guess that's sort of like playing it because, I mean, even when you're playing it yourself, you're more so watching it. And it was really fun to watch him play it. And because we watched him play it with about, at one point, with five other people in the room. So, you know, it was like actually watching like a movie, like getting your friends sitting down and watching a movie. And I know how sometimes when you're watching movies with friends, you sort of yell at the screen like, oh, don't go in there, don't do that. But, you know, it's not going to have any effect on, you know, what happens in the game, in the movie. But with Heavy Rain, because it's a game, you can yell at the person playing the game and stuff will actually change on the screen. Like, oh, don't choose that kid or don't go that way. Or maybe it's this person or shoot that guy, you know, and it actually has an effect on the game. So it was really interesting, you know, way to experience, I guess, a movie in a way. We beat the whole thing, so we found out who the killer was, and I think we found out probably sooner than most people would find out, just because we had so many people debating on whether or not who they thought it was. So there's a lot of different viewpoints going into it. We're all trying to figure it out at the same time. I mean, the game looked great on PS3, of course. I mean, the graphics were amazing. I did have some problems with some of the voice acting, but I mean, it wasn't a huge, huge issue in the end. But overall, I mean, I really liked it. It was really fun. I mean, just to watch. I mean, even though I wasn't doing anything, I felt pretty involved in it. And I know my roommate, I can't comment for him exactly, but he himself said he got really, really into it at times. And there's one scene with a car chase where he was like freaking out. He had the controller and like there's all these motion controls and he was like punching people in the head trying to move the remote around, and I don't know, it was a lot of fun. So if you ever play Heavy Rain, I suggest playing with friends just because it makes the experience that much better. So that's what I've been playing.
What a name redacted convert. You're not gonna like part of the rest of the show then.
I know, I thought it was pretty timely.
Yeah. If I really wanted to watch a game masturbate, I could think of better things to do with my time. Maybe not. One of these days, whether it's after the PS3 goes out of cycle or sometime before that, I probably it's kind of like the car wreck rubbernecking thing. I have this kind of morbid curiosity to actually play that game, and just see for myself, you know, what it really is. But anyway, as to what I've been playing, it's been kind of an MMO fest, but I did finish Dungeon Siege 3. It's not short. It's probably actually about right, but they really boned it.
they could have taken that story in a lot of other places. It's probably destined for a sequel or DSC. DSC? That would be the Distinguished Service Cross. Wrong. DLC that I didn't even bother thumbing through. Here's the funny thing. Again, we're going to be talking about Name Redacted a little later in the show, but it's always been my contention and always will be my contention. And it's something that I look for, that a perfect combination of awesome graphics, decent controls, and an excellent story are always going to get my attention in a video game. Beautiful cinematography and a brilliant story is always going to do that in other media formats that are not video games. But this game, Dungeon Siege 3, is the first time that I can remember, so let's just put it in a long time, that I really, really, really liked the story. I really kind of wanted to see how they wrapped it up, where they went with it, how it all kind of came to be, because you were given some critical choices where you could go, oh, let's just, for sake argument, say light side, dark side, so to speak. And I really loved the story. Nah, that's too strong. I really liked the story, but just about everything else about that game was mediocre at best. You know, the customization of your character with gear, it was the exact same as far as I can remember from Dungeon Siege 1 and 2. Got really pointless after a while. Once you got to, like, gold fonted weapons, which is essentially rare type weapons, you never needed to switch again. I think for the last third of the game, I never switched out my weapon sets or armor sets again. I kind of tend to like to tinker with that stuff, and when I'm not allowed to or not given anything better than what I've already got, it kind of annoys me. The controls, I'm not going to call them broken because I played with a ranged character. I should really go back and at least play a good half hour to an hour with a melee character to see if it is any better. But they were mediocre. It's really annoying when you're fighting a boss and you flick the control in his direction and the little highlight thing at his feet is not up, so you shoot a barrel or a wall or something completely not the boss character. The level design was just all right. I mean, it just was really kind of funny to me. I sat there for probably 5 minutes while the credits roll, which is something I normally never do in games, and just I'm like, yeah, that was a really good story. I wish they put a good game around it. So if you like action adventure RPGs and, you know, you got the bucks to spend, I wouldn't fault you for trying it out, but I don't know. If there's a Dungeon Siege 4, and I'm sure there will be, I'll be hesitant at best to even give it a look, would be my suspicion. Playing more Worm, obviously, playing a lot of that. I've gotten back into Guild Wars 2, and apart from the fact that the controls are really wonky, I had forgotten. It took me a couple days to get used to the camera/movement-style controls that this game has. Essentially, you move your character with your keyboard and the camera. You kind of move, or you can freewheel it with your mouse. And that takes some getting used to, which led to a couple hilarious moments, because with the guild that I am a member of, Combat Wombats, I did some dungeon raids this weekend. And there was one point when we were fighting the final boss in this dungeon, and things had gone extremely well. We'd had one fit of everybody dying over and over again at this one point, but in reality, it had been a really smooth run. Lots of fun. I had some issues with the controls, or with my control on the keyboard, and I fell into a lake of lava, and I missed pretty much 3/4 of the last boss fight. Thankfully, the rest of the group was far more coordinated than I was and was able to finish it. But it's funny because when you're in a good group, whether it's the WPO crew and we're playing FPSs or whether it's the various crews I play with in the MMOs, you feel really guilty because you don't want to have somebody come get you because that could potentially put them in harm's way. And with this particular boss, it would have. And you really feel like a schmuck because you are not helping. You're not helping out. And unlike FMF? Oh, Lord. That's a motorcycle pipe company. FPS. MMO dungeons and raids are designed specifically for a team to work together as a team. It's, from my experience, almost impossible, if not impossible, to finish most of these types of events, or whatever you want to call them, without at least some semblance of teamwork. You know, but I'm having a lot of fun with that. I really don't see myself getting heavy duty back into Guild Wars 2, i.e. leveling up some of the other characters I've got. I think I will confine myself to just running dungeons on the weekends with this guild. It's a great group of gamers. They're all a bunch of older adults or old internet old people like myself, and that makes them just a butt ton of fun to be around. And I also got back into Star Trek Online. And if I had nothing else going on so I could commit the time to it, I could see myself getting into Star Trek Online more for reasons that I stated last week, the ship-to-ship combat, some things like that, and, of course, questing and all that crap. But I just don't think I have the time it would take to really get competent at the game. I may check in and fart around with it once or twice more, but I really think I'm just going to have to say, okay, that's not something I have the time for at the moment. It's a free-to-play MMO. It's on Steam, unless Steam decides to withdraw from Windows-based computers entirely. I think I've got some time to play it again if I want to. And then another game I picked up, and it's one that normally I wouldn't have too much to do with, but a friend of mine that I play with, or I play Worm with, told me about this game called Navage. And it's essentially like a cross between Port Royal and Sid Meier's Pirates, except it's a web browser game. So for those of you that don't know what Pirates and Port Royal are, Port Royal is an RTS set in the 1700s, and you essentially have to build your trade empire using RTS-type stuff. Pirates, on the other hand, is a little bit like that, except with a lot more fighting, dancing, combat, and Sid Meier-style humor. And this game takes both of those, what I feel are the best of both of those, and combines them. I'm not entirely sure my longevity on this one either, although what I like about it is the fact that it's similar to some of the Facebook games in that when you give your fleets a set of orders, or you build something in your harbors, or you do this, that, and the other thing, you have a countdown timer that you have to wait through, unless you want to pay real money to speed things up, which I don't. So you can kind of just set it and forget it. You know, you can just take it, set up a bunch of stuff, know that you got 3 or 4 hours before you have to, you know, do anything, interact with anything, and go on about your business. The problem with that for me is a lot of times then I forget to do it entirely. So, you know, and then a few days of that, and it gets forgotten entirely, and then I look up at my web browser bar 6 months later going, what in the hell is that link to? So, let me think. Oh, and I played a round of golf on Xbox Live before I came on the show. Not Tiger Woods, the Avatar golf I always play. It has a calming effect on me, supposedly. I mean, that's all I've been playing this week. Moving on to, you know, if you haven't heard, and I was going to do this as a news story, but now we're not going to. Excuse me while I drink water. I talked a lot. SimCity 5 came out. And in what was only surprising to tribes deep within the South American jungle, it's been a clusterfuck. For 3 days, the servers have been a mess. The people who have bought the game have not been able to log in.
if you believe some of the rumors, and I have not seen them corroborated, some people have been refused to rerun. Good Lord, Bruce, refund. And customer service is being dicks. And, of course, again, public perception. EA is the most evil company in the world. They're currently building a Death Star behind our moon. You heard it here first. But what I find so surprising about this is two things. One, there was a beta, like at least one, if not two betas for this game. And two, it's comical to go down your social media list and see the same people who half a year ago or a year ago were bitching about this problem with Diablo 3 when they bought it on launch day, saying they would never do it again, only to have lined up like a bunch of lemmings to do it again with SimCity. We have battered the human element of this to death enough for now, obviously. But it does lead me to question whether or not betas have any place in this world anymore, like they used to, even though I'm not a humongous fan of them and tend to pick and choose which ones I partake in, or have they just become ultimately part of the hype machine, and you should expect, beta or not, that a lot of these games are going to be less than perfect from launch day to anywhere between 5 to 8 days afterwards. Glacinator, let's start with you.
Okay. I was talking to my friend actually earlier about this because I thought it was an interesting question. And he brought up an interesting point of distinguishing between closed and open betas, which I think is a good point. And he mostly was thinking about how open betas, more so now, tend to be more so of a publicity stunt, more so than actually, you know, trying to fix, you know, game problems. And sometimes, you know, an open beta can actually cause more problems in the end, as we all know from certain things that have come out in the past year. But I think that we do have to distinguish that there still are closed betas, and betas can still be useful for, you know, in-house, you know, if you're still trying to get the kinks out before you, you know, release it to the public, and you're still trying to beta test it, you know, with a closed group of people, then I think it's still useful. But in terms of open betas, I think you can easily say it's more so of a publicity stunt. I mean, you do have a few cases like Minecraft. I mean, but can you even call that a beta, you know, just because it's out for so long? You
know? Oh, let's not even talk about that because...
Okay.
Minecraft,
that's a whole other can of worms, yeah.
Minecraft and Worm both. Like there's been now some debate amongst the Worm community, you know, because... Notch at first didn't even want to call it a beta. He just wanted to say it was gold and we're working on it. Java-based games are never finished. They never leave beta. So
yeah.
You're correct in that that's a can of worms we really don't want to open, I don't think. I do have a question for you, though. Are you talking in-house... with poor bastard interns?
Yes, yes.
And quality control testers?
Testers, yes. Air quotes, testers.
Yeah. Galley slaves. Because there are some public closed betas. Now, do you see those as hype machine? Or, well, let me back up.
If they make a big deal about it.
Let me back up. Well, I mean, they're known. Let me back up. Usually, and maybe this will change your opinion, maybe not. Usually, they're limited to people who have expressed a rabid interest in the game, people who have bought prior games. Like, say, for Guild Wars 2, there was a closed, non-public beta, but they sent out invites to a lot of people who had played Guild Wars 1. Still part of the hype machine, or what you said before?
Yeah, I think so. I think even then, it's still hype.
Because of how social media is now?
Yeah. You know, it's like, ooh, I got into the closed beta. You know, I'm special, you know?
Well, yeah, it's an e-penis thing, even if that particular person doesn't have a penis. E-vagina just sounds wrong, so there you go. John! I think technically that's a fleshlight. Sorry. Part of the hype machine, still a useful tool, or should it just all be galley slaves chained to their desks for 30 hours a week trying to break games?
I think if it's done right, it can be a useful tool for sure. It, like when, but when I will, you know, when I log into, you know, PlayStation Store and a quote unquote beta is available for me in the demo section, and you know, that's when I start getting suspicious of if it's actually a beta or a hype machine. It's, I'm sure there's, you know, there's some data that someone's getting, you know, out of it on some level, but really, by the time it's hitting the PSN store or the Xbox Marketplace and they're calling it a beta, like it's not a beta. It's, you know, it's like a pre-release. It's just to get people talking. Oh, you know, like as you put it, oh, I got into the beta, you know. You can get into the beta too, and it just gets people talking about the game even before they have to put an ounce of marketing into it. And it's smart to make people feel special about being in some preview, pre-release, you know, thing where, you know, oh, it's so elitist, and oh, it's so, you know, I'm so special. But you know, it just seems to be not what you would think a real beta would be about in terms of, again, bugs and weeding out the problems. I mean, I was a part of, I guess at this point I can say it. I'm pretty sure I have said it. I was part of the Kinect beta, and you know, I took an active role in giving feedback and uploading voice command recordings and stuff to add to their database to improve it and all that kind of stuff. So I actually felt like I was a part of a process. You know, you had to sign up, and you know, you may have gotten in or you may not have. And in the end, I got to keep my Kinect as part of that beta. That was, you know, that was a really cool bonus that they never mentioned beforehand. And so that felt, you know, like a real beta, as I said. And but you know, Little Big Planet Racers beta, where as long as you put in your email address, you got in, didn't seem like a real beta.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a very valid point. Shit, I had two and one just escaped, and that's all right. I was just going to be rude and disgusting anyway, so it doesn't matter. The Kinect beta, I mean, really the only damage you suffered from that, and yes, you have mentioned it several times for this very fact, the only damage you suffered from that was getting a free shot of Patrick's junk. Other than that, it was pretty much, nobody should be forced to endure that.
It was traumatic, but I got over it.
Xbox, kill. Xbox, guillotine. Anyway, Xbox pants. But that, to me, was more like an extension of Q&A. QA control, you know, quality assurance control.
Mm-hmm.
Because you guys had to sign an NDA,
mm-hmm.
which nobody broke. You also had to fill out stuff. You know, you were essentially a quality assurance tester without being chained to your desk.
Yeah.
They had already broken it. You just would put the fine touches on it. And I will tell you another one that did it right in the last, say, 2 years, 3 years, was Guild Wars 2. They had, obviously, their internal stuff, which we never hear about. They had two closed private betas, neither of which I got into, but I talked to a few folks who said that ArenaNet sent them stuff to fill out, and then they had a free weekend, like an early release free weekend, which was a clever little way to test their servers. I got into that because I bought a copy like a few days before launch and didn't even know that I'd gotten into the advanced, you know, pre-launch thing. And it finally dawned on me and I hopped on for like the last, I don't know, 32 hours of it, not total, but that was what I had access. That game had the smoothest launch of any game I've ever seen. And if some of these knuckleheads would pay attention to how ArenaNet did it, they would learn. But ultimately, I think the rise of social media and the e-penis contest has caused betas
to become nothing but hype machines. Like, Glacier, did you take part in the Battlefield 3 beta?
I tried to, but...
Oh, that's right. College internet stopped you from...
Yeah.
That was just the same map over and over again.
Yeah.
There was no reason for that. Were any of the Halo betas any more substantive, or was it pretty much the same thing?
Halo 3 was just publicity, for sure. Was there even a Reach beta?
I can't remember now. I was thinking of Halo 3, but was there a beta for Halo where the garbage company crew?
What?
ODST.
Oh, ODST. Yeah, I think there was a beta for that.
I think that might have been the last beta.
I remember there was a beta that I did participate in. It might have been Reach, now that I think about it.
Might have been. Well, here's my problem, and John kind of hit on it, and so did Glacinator. Here's my other problem. For years, like the first year we did this show, I'd kind of gone on a personal boycott of the damn things because I got sick of being companies' Q&A testers for free. Now, I'm not sure what Q&A testers get paid, but I've heard plenty of stories about the hours they work, the things they're forced to do. You know, when you have to break Dora the Explorer for PS2 over and over and over again and play it until it breaks, file a report, and then play it again, your life is hell. And then I kind of got into them a little bit, but then I started to have this thought that you know, they're just part of the hype machine. This is a rhetorical question, but just go ahead and chime in yes or no so we have it on the record for the ancient rich sacrifice rituals later on in the year. I'm going to guess that I'm going to assume that, like me, you think that social media has only made this problem worse in all aspects, John, or do you have a different take?
I think worse in the people who feel the need to brag about their e-penis. But then it's all part of the plan. You know, it's all part of these quote-unquote open betas, and they want you to talk about those open betas, and therefore other people will go, oh, I can get in on that, you know, secret little thing too, hey? You know, it's all about getting people talking. All part of the plan.
Glaze.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with you guys. Like Bruce said, you just sort of wave your e-penis now around for the most part, you know, if you get into a beta or not. I do think there are some cases where it is helpful, but for the most part, I think it's just a lot of bragging now.
Yeah, I don't know. Just stop, Bruce. Don't go to the Pavlovian "why won't humans learn" bit. That we'll just leave it at that. Betas might still be useful, but in a lot of cases they're just the hype machine. Let's put a nice bow on it right there and call it good, because there ain't no point in beating that dead horse about humanity anymore, because I think there's only an eyeball left of it at this point. Moving on. In some news that I had heard rumblings of, but had not heard definitively about until this story, Call of Duty co-creator reportedly departs Respawn, and it has since been confirmed. This story was up several days ago. I apologize for not having a newer copy for you all. Call of Duty co-creator Jason West has left Respawn, the studio he co-founded, following his firing from Infinity Ward in 2010. According to Kotaku's anonymous sources, which has now been for the most part confirmed, the departure was amicable and is due to a family issue. He's been absent from the studio since basically when they settled the lawsuit in May of 2012. Now, the internet, and you can just scroll right down here in the CBG comments and other comments, are A, overreacting, saying now whatever Respawn's doing is going to suck, blah, 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 even though it's been heavily reported he hasn't even been working on what they're going to show us at E3. And B, of course, because once again, it's the internet, this is all EA's fault because now they're going to put microtransactions in all their games. Oh, wait, no, they're not. yes, they are, kind of horse shit. Here's my contention, and this is one of those stories where I've actually got something I'd like to feedback from you two about. I don't think this matters shit to what Respawn's doing. People have, you know, family issues. There's family illnesses. There's wanting to spend more time with family. You know, the gaming industry is a business like several that you put in a lot of hours and a lot of time. And these guys' lives since 2010 haven't exactly been the most stable is not the correct term. It hasn't been the most non-chaotic, let's put it that way. I personally don't think that this is going to have any effect on the games that they're about to announce or are supposedly going to announce at E3. Glacinator, let's start with you. Do you have a different opinion, or what is your take on this gentleman's leaving of Respawn to take care of family issues?
I mean, I guess it stinks, but I mean, I don't really see it as that big of a deal in the end. I mean, you have a whole studio behind it, you know. One guy leaving is not going to, or should not, you know, topple everything else. I mean, who's to say it can't, but I mean, this is really not that big of a deal to me, at least.
John?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to change the whole outlook of what Respawn's going to do. I mean, kudos to him for putting family first. You know, I don't think it's a big issue.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you there. And it's the damn internet. I understand that, but it's amazing to me that I didn't see that many people, you know, applauding him for taking care of his family. Oh, this is some kind of work. This is some kind of just cover up. He wants to leave because EA sucks. Blah 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 blah. You know, I unless it's proven that he's lying out his ass. I mean, you know, then obviously that's a different scenario. But as of right now, he's got a family issue. He's taking care of it. And like Glacinator said, and that's where I kind of went with it, was, you know, one person shouldn't topple a game's development unless it's Kitty Dragons, and then, well, that might be proving out to be true one of these days. We don't know. Let's see. Okay. There was something else that I wanted to talk about as far as Respawn. Actually, let's go ahead and do this. This was a secondary thought in my head, since it's now pretty much confirmed that Respawn is going to show us something at E3. Given what we know about Bungie and what they have chosen to do as their next particular title, John, let's start with you. Do you think we'll see something radically different from Respawn, or given their history, even dating back to when they were a member of the Medal of Honor studio 2015, I think, are they just pretty much going to stand pat, stay safe, and we're going to see the next modern shooter number God knows what?
I don't think they're going to deviate too far from what you know, brought them to the dance, so to speak. But I think what you might see is an evolution of that. You know, they'll whatever they're going to show is going to look incredible, because I'm sure it's going to be ready for next gen platforms I don't think they're going to reinvent the wheel, but I think they're going to show something pretty spectacular nonetheless.
Glace.
Oops, sorry, mute. Oh my goodness, terrible tonight. I mean, honestly, I could see this just being another flat out Call of Duty reskinned, something, you know, not really deviating much from, you know, the Call of Duty formula. Maybe an interesting setting, but I mean, it's probably going to be FPS. It's probably going to be mostly based online, you know. So
I honestly don't really see it going that far, you know, leaving that far from the tree, whatever the saying is.
You know, for those of you listening, these two gentlemen have probably got it exactly right. But in an era of gaming and in a time when it seems to be sequel number 5,000 or knockoff, if you want to call it that, although calling something a clone at this point is just absolutely fucking getting utterly ridiculous for so many reasons. I really, really want Respawn to do something different. I have to say that I was disappointed with Bungie. I mean, everything looks great. It's probably going to be an awesome game, whatever it turns out to be. But it just looked too much like what they've already done. And you can go back through the catalog of these shows in God knows how many cases. I said that I hope Bungie and Respawn do something radically different, do something that, you know, that they're passionate about, that they really, really want to get behind, but that's not where they've already trodden. I'm just terrified that these guys are absolutely 100% correct. And I'm going to be honest, it's almost going to be not a breaking point, but a real soul-searching moment for me. Because when guys in studios that are known for really class quality work are too afraid to step out onto the really shaky limbs, I don't know if we're in that good a shape or not. I mean, obviously, when the guys that started Infinity Ward left 2015, yes, they stayed with the World War II genre, but having played all those games from the Medal of Honor games to the early CODs, there was radical differences, and it was a much more fun game to play when they went to COD than say Medal of Honor was. Although the early Medal of Honors were fun. I just think that in this, you know, social media, what have you done for me lately? Industry and hell world for that matter. I think these guys are absolutely right. I'm actually kind of dreading E3 this year for that very reason. Because I don't want to fast track the industry to mainstream and all this other garbage like that Git and the Next Story does. But I'm really craving something new.
This is going to be a really strange E3. I know we say that every year, but just the way everything's already set up, I agree with you. I'm dreading it as well.
Well, if you go off public perception, and for those of you listening, public perception, not reality. The Wii U's failed. The PS4, we don't know what the fuck it is, other than it's a Sony product. The Xbox 720 is MIA. Bungie has created a Halo-like MMO. Maybe it's not an MMO. Respawn's down a man. There's sequels aplenty. Dead Space has been canned. No, it hasn't. I can't find anything to be hopeful about. That's the shitty part about it. And I want to be, but I have no concept of what's going to happen. And none of that is, none of what I just said there is reality. It's just kind of the hive mind perception to my mind from what I've been viewing. But I think one guy leaving is not going to be the problem. I think it's going to be stepping out of the shadow of COD enough to differentiate themselves. Oh, and finally, in a story or whatever you want to call it that I wanted to do and then didn't want to do and then wanted to do and then didn't want to do and then didn't want to do and then decided to do because I actually have what I hope is a semi-fucking decent question about it. If you haven't heard, William Dafoe, who has quite the cult internet following, if you're not aware, has been added
to as a talent, voice talent, to Name Redacted 2's latest game, Beyond Two Souls. Now, I had thought about taking some of the juiciest, read stupidest quotes from this article, but to be honest, the first time I read this article, I vomited in my mouth a little bit. You know, so let me give you a slight sample. Defoe's character starts off as something of a surrogate father for Holmes before eventually using her abilities to push his own agenda. It's a complicated relationship, which Name Redacted 2 says results in a caliber of acting performance which never before has been seen in a video game. See, there, I did it again. I just verped in my mouth. But that's not my question. Believe it or not, that's... Look, we know the guy's batshit, guano-eating insane. We know he doesn't get it. It doesn't matter how many goddamn pixels you stuff up somebody's ass. If there's no story, then it sucks. Or it's not going to be that great. My question to you gentlemen, and I'm really hoping that I can display more self-control in the next 6 months and just avoid stories about him. Is a personality like this, with his agenda, with his outlook, with his attitude, good for the industry, bad for the industry, or it doesn't matter, every family has its fair share of nuts? John, why don't you start us off?
I think he certainly has a case of really pumping himself and his company up a lot. Like he's on one hand, I guess he's pushing the envelope on what a performance can be in a game. I'll give him that much, and some people who have some credentials under their belts can certainly give you quite a performance. But boy, he really lays it on thick, and how marvelous and how great it all is, and the most unbelievable thing you've ever seen in all of entertainment, and yeah, it gets pretty thick, yeah.
No, but that wasn't my question. Let me say it again. Maybe I didn't make sense.
Oh. Well, I'll be honest. I was a little distracted when you were talking because Peter was crying. I could hear him through the baby monitor.
I thought I heard. I couldn't tell if that was some drunken frat boy out in front of Glacier, wherever Glacier's at, or your kid. But I did vaguely hear screaming of some type. No worries. That's fine. We all have those kinds of things to do. Well, not all of us, but yeah. Anyway. No, my question is his Name Redacted for the man formerly known as Cage? Is this person, persona, whatever, his attitude, his demeanor, his just him, is this good for the, is it good for the industry to have somebody like this around? Bad, neutral, because like I said a little bit ago, every family has its fair share of just batshit crazy people.
I think in some ways he's good. If he's the guy who's bringing in, more recognizable names and brings more attention to the industry, that's great. But if he's nothing but full of hot air, then he becomes just his own bloated hype machine, and that doesn't do anybody any favors if they don't deliver.
So you're kind of
neutral.
Okay. Gleisenheider.
I think the reason why you hate him so much, Bruce, and why everyone hates him so much, at least gamer-wise, is that you're not dealing with a game designer here. You're dealing with the director, if that makes any sense. I mean, having played through Heavy Rain, it definitely was it was very movie-oriented, more so than game-oriented. I mean, it's still a game, but I mean, he's trying to get famous actors. He's trying to get the mocap right. He's trying to promote this sort of new technology, and to do that for Hollywood, you gotta beef it up. You gotta have a good presentation to get people behind you on it. So while, I mean, he has made some retarded comments about people not getting certain things in his games, I think that for the environment he's trying to market himself in, he sort of has to do that. Because, it's more of a movie for him than a game. And I think that's the only way he thinks he'll get recognized in a larger sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're not going to like this, but he's not a director. He's not. You're game. This is so much to me
like Cliffy B's I'm a rock star bullshit. You're a game designer. You have made Fahrenheit... Wait a minute. Indigo. I'll just call it Indigo Prophecy. Indigo Prophecy. You've made Heavy Rain. You're now making this. You made an Old Man Head. Yeah, there's directors involved, i.e. giving direction. You know, directors aren't just in movies. In video games. But to act like you do, you're in the wrong fucking medium, as far as I'm concerned. And on top of that, that by itself's not why I really severely dislike him. He's a pretentious, snobbish douchebag who thinks people should just all get on board and drink his Jonestown Kool-Aid. And
well, I didn't say he wasn't.
No, but what I'm saying is I'm just clarifying. That's the reason I hate him. I don't hate him because he thinks of himself as a director or if he's trying to do more cinematic stuff in video games. I don't have a problem with any of that. That's cool. That's all cool to me. And there was a lot in Heavy Rain that I've seen from YouTube videos and talk to people and things of that nature that was very impressive. It's his attitude. It's his demeanor. It's this pretentious, snobbish, shitbag attitude that we're all Philistines who just don't fucking get it. And I am. I say the F word 77 times during the show. I'm a Philistine. Piss off. I still know what art is, and I still know what good is, and I don't need you telling me that I'm too stupid to get it. You know, it just doesn't help your case any. And on top of that, and if I'm probably going to get slaughtered for this, and let me say as a preface that I love William Dafoe. Spider-Man would not have been the same without him. Platoon would not have been the same without him. Platoon is my favorite movie with him in it. But I'm sorry. His name's not De Niro. His name's not Nicholson. His name's not Hoffman. His name's not... Do I need to go on? Blow me. And until you get Dustin Hoffman or Al Pacino in your little mocap suit, blow me. I'm going to say it again, and this is kind of why I came up with that other question, which Glazner really didn't answer either. This ain't fucking Hollywood. It's the video game industry. And that's the thing. He does so much detrimental to the talent he does get. And Dafoe is a great talent. I don't want to hear one iota that I trashed on Dafoe. It has nothing to do with it. But there are tiers. There are different levels of talent in Hollywood. I'm sorry. And that's the thing. For all the good he does, as far as I'm concerned, every bit of good and envelope pushing he does, he dumps like 60 barge loads of elephant dung on top of it. And it's like, oh, God. But, Glaze, to answer the question, is he good for gaming or not? Or are you neutral to him, too? I.e., not good tap dance around the question.
I think he is. I'm going to defer from you guys, and I say I think he is. I still think he's a douchebag, but I think that he's, you know, promoting having more advanced technologies in games, which, you know, you need someone to do that. I mean, I wish he wasn't as much of an asshole about it, but, you know, at least he's doing it.
Well, oddly enough, and I don't even know how this is going to sound, but here goes. I think he's good for games, too. You can call me whatever name, you particular name, you two, audience at home, you like, but the reality is the area he's trying to push, he's good for games. Forgetting to put a story into things, not so much. You know. But honestly, I do. I think you have to have these people. I just wish they didn't have to come with the fucking attitude.
Yeah, the attitude is I think I maybe didn't phrase it well enough. Like, the attitude is the bad thing. Like, I like the fact that he's pushing the boundaries of what games are And as much as he so desperately wants it to be Hollywood, he desperately wants to be a director, and you know, you're right, he's not. But he, you know, I do, and that's why I'm neutral. Like he's a douchebag, but he is trying to push those boundaries.
No, you're not neutral. You're pretty much like us. Yes, he's good, but God, the price is such a pain in the fucking ass. It's really what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he's good for the industry, but God, the price is just such a nightmare for those of us that, even at our level, cover the industry. And here's my other problem, and maybe you guys are different, and you can tell me if you are. If you're working in one industry, and you want to, and your real dream is to be working in another, doing something else, go do that. You know, it's like a brain surgeon who wants to be a firefighter, so he moonlights on weekends, no, that was a bad analogy. It's not going to go anywhere good. You get what I mean, though. I was going to make a joke about a hose in an operating room, and I just realized that was not good. You know, my problem has always been with people like this, and I actually know a couple who are, I wouldn't call them personal friends, but personal acquaintances. If you want to go and be a Hollywood director, then go be a Hollywood director. You know, I don't know. Is that true, Glace, or and you would know because you're so much more tapped into animation and art and all this stuff.
You would have a great time in my critique classes, Bruce.
Oh,
I'd love you to defend a piece of art in there. It'd be hilarious.
Oh, I'd get. You know, here's the funny thing, and there's going to be a couple people who are going to go, well, then why don't you do that on the show? I am fully capable of having the same kind of rants, minus the four-letter words. I'm called upon to do it often. I don't like to. To me, it doesn't cheapen the language. It just makes it far more colorful and lets you know that exactly how I feel. Am I wrong? Let me ask you that, and then we'll end this discussion, and I'll try and do like a 6-month moratorium of no more name redacted too, for a while, probably till E3. I'll attempt. I'm not making any promises, but I will attempt to not do it until E3. But shit, now I forgot. But am I wrong, Glace? Or shouldn't he just go like work in Hollywood if that's what he wants to do? If that's his overriding love, is cinema?
Your question is: do Hollywood directors have a place in the gaming industry? Is that?
Well, no, actually, that's an even better question because you know Guillermo del Toro has tried it. Shit, who is that other one whose studio just went belly up? Oh, poop. There have been a few that have tried it with mixed results. James Cameron? Was it James Cameron who started a video game studio and then it went belly up? Can they cross back and forth?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. I'm asking you your question.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a huge gray area. I mean, they're both a media, you know, genre, you know. I mean, the games have more interactivity, but at the same time, they're both story-driven media-based things, you know? So I wouldn't care if a Hollywood director made a video game. I wouldn't care if a video game designer made a movie. I mean, there are definitely a lot of occasions where that overlaps, and the result is something that totally sucks, you know? But, I mean, someone's going to get it right eventually, you know? I don't think people should be put in certain categories for things that they should work on, you know? The more variety you have in jobs and people that with different experiences, the more, you know, variety you get in the final product. So who cares who works on a game, in my opinion, as long as the outcome is good.
And vice versa, I assume.
Yeah.
John, what about you? Should Cage just go be a movie director? Should movie directors not come over and make games like Guillermo del Toro? Couldn't he just shorten his name to like the Mexican or something? No, I'm kidding. I actually love Del Toro's movies. Or
Or should they just kind of stick in their own pond? Should Cage just go be a movie director and leave us the fuck alone?
I think it would be interesting to see how he would handle an actual film, you know, rather than the video game, you know, version of a film, so to speak. But he, despite, you know, if you can filter through the bullshit, I think you do find that he does have a love of games and technology and integrating, you know, the film experience within a game. So I think he does enjoy what it does. But I think it would be interesting for him to, for that experience, just to see the other side of the coin rather than, you know, trying to see what he can do and see if he can actually do it.
Ooh. What do you think of that, Glacinator? Actually sending him over there to let him make a movie in any way, shape, or form he wants and see what happens.
We have like a trade-off, like a hostage situation.
Oh.
We'll swap you, David Cage, for, Steven Spielberg or Tarantino.
Spielberg was involved with Boom Blocks. He doesn't get any more tries.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Love your movies, but you don't get any more tries in video games. Sorry, you're out. Tarantino. I don't think he could make a game that wouldn't be AO. I really don't. If you haven't seen the unrated Inglourious Bastards, yeah, I just don't think he could.
I think someone made a reskin of Red Dead Redemption, but with Django Unchained stuff.
Oh, for the PC RDR?
Yeah. I know it's completely off topic, but that sounds awesome.
That almost makes it worth buying it on PC just to see that. I need to go see Django Unchained. I really do, before it gets out of theaters. I need to see a lot of movies, though. So. John, what would you... final question, and then we'll kind of wrap the show up for this week. We're actually kind of like giving a spoiler sneak peek of possible things to come. Which director would you want to trade for, or was Tarantino your pick?
He's a good one. I'm trying to think of the name. He's the guy who did the Scott Pilgrim movie. He's like that movie has so much video game in it. It'd be interesting to see what he would do with the game. Edgar Wright or something, I think. He's the guy behind like Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, and I think it's Edgar Wright.
Yeah, I don't. What is Scott Pilgrim Saves the World?
Yeah.
Glacinator, what about you? What would your pick be?
Oh, I totally pick Tarantino. I think that'd be amazing. Tarantino for Cage. There you go.
Well, at least Tarantino doesn't quite send me into friggin' foam-inducing rages as often. That's the other thing. I think it's also about when you, how you talk about your craft. I seriously do, because there's just some people I can list. Yeah, you were correct. Edgar Wright. In case you weren't 100% sure, John, I looked it up. Okay. So there's in a lot of genres, a lot of different genres, not just video games. There's people I can listen to talk about their craft or what they do, and there's people that I just want to stab my eardrums with knives when when they're mentioned. A director that hasn't actually done one, because I think Pete Jackson has two. Oh. You know what? I'm going to go with one that's not possible, because it'd be kind of actually comical just to see. I'm going to go with the out there pick. I loved Red Dead Redemption so much that, you know who I'd like to see make a video game, and it'd obviously be a Western, would be John Ford. I'm aware he's dead. Because I'm not going with the easy geek answers. I'm not going with J.J. Abrams. I'm not going with Joss Whedon. It's just too fucking easy. They're too much nerds. That's too easy. Like Tarantino's one I wouldn't have thought of, honestly. I like both you guys' answers, so I'll just go with the weird one, John Ford. I love his westerns, so Or the crazy Italian guy that didn't speak any English yet directed Clint Eastwood in a bunch of spaghetti westerns. I can't think of his name. He's dead too, I would imagine. So there you go. Name Redacted 2. It's official. There's a moratorium until at least E3. I'm going to do my damnedest to just... What I'll do is when I see his name in the RSS reader, I'll just keep scrolling. John, did you hear this week which movie producer, studio, stars, game studio went belly up? It's driving me bonkers. I saw it, and it's not Cameron. I can't remember. There was one that crossed over that I thought...
In a gaming company, you said?
Yeah, he had a studio.
I see that Majesco got warned of being delisted from the NASDAQ stock market.
Majesco's still in business?
Okay, not that one then.
I didn't know they were still in business. Oh, it's not coming to me now. Oh, forget it. I think we got enough show for the show. Let's see what's up. Let's see what's going on here. It was a name you'd know too, Glaze. It wasn't like Michael Bay or anything stupid like that. So that's our show this week. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we have multiple ways you can do that. Number one is we have a Facebook or ad book. the internet yellow pages. Anyways, we do have a Facebook. It's wonderpodonline.com. No, it's not. It's Wonderpod Online. Sorry, I'm slowly running out of gas now for some reason. We have a website. That's wonderpodonline.com. We have YouTube channels. Wonderpod Online. Glacinator's got a channel where he puts up some of his animations from college and other stuff, playthrough videos. I've got a YouTube channel, although most of my crap's on, and I do mean crap's on, the Wonderpod Online channel. If you didn't catch the website, it's wonderpodonline.com. That's where this podcast is hosted. We have an embedded player there so that if you don't like downloading, but if you do like downloading and you got this in some other way, you can get the show at archive.org or you can get the show at iTunes. Just search WonderPod. Although, as of last week, we are actually listed in the iTunes store for once, so you can give us a rating, give us a feedback. Apparently, it's now translated into over 100 languages, so wherever you may be listening, feel free. If none of that works for you, we have an email address. It's wonderpodonline@gmail.com, wonderpodonline@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at WonderPodOnline, or you can follow me on Twitter at ORIGIM, or you can follow John on Twitter
at John Kehoe, JONKEHOE.
I'm not doing any more Glacinator jokes because I did find out there wasn't at Clown Shoes. He had like 5 followers. Until episode 150, I am Bruce McGee. I'm off to not think about art for at least, I don't know, 2 days. See you, people.
Good luck.
Good luck. Cheers.
Goodbye.